Hey, Maniacs.
Hey, Mystery Maniacs. Welcome to the 200th episode, which is a remix of episode 134, Poirot, Season 1, Episode 6, Triangle at Rhodes. Hey, y'all.
It's a love triangle.
I got my sun visor on. That's one of our best titles, I'd say.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. We got some good ones.
We have some really good.
See last week.
Yes.
Okay.
So last week, the title was Coal Troll's Big Night Out. And Coal Troll has taken on a life of his own.
Now I'm designing a t-shirt as we speak.
Yep.
With Poirot standing next to Coal Troll.
We have had many, many individuals mention the Coal Troll.
We have received images of
Coal Troll. We have received images of the Coal Troll.
Speaking of images, listener, did you see our little door?
Yes, I posted the little door on all of the socials.
Somebody messaged me and said, we also have a strange door. I'm like, but you haven't seen ours yet. You wait. We got a weird door.
Our little door is quite strange.
We posted that picture. I'm feeling feisty today.
Why are you feeling feisty? I know why you're
feeling. Well, no, first of all, I got to cancel a bunch of meetings for Monday. With just due to the apocalypse.
Yes.
As
otherwise
message.
Known as the eclipse.
To cancel the meetings.
But Indiana has declared a state of emergency now. Oh, it's going to be crazy.
I'm also feeling feisty because for this remix, you're going to let me talk about that new official Midsummer Murders Mayhem podcast,
okay,
I get to talk about how I feel about it.
Before we talk about that.
Okay.
We got to talk about Tea with the Maniacs.
Ooh, yeah. Because so, that's really what we're going to do for the 200th episode.
That's really the 200th episode. And last week, we put out the newsletter and asked for questions for Tea with the Maniacs. And boy, you guys are responding like crazy.
So Sunday, April 28th at 4 p.m., mark your calendars, live on YouTube, Tea with the Maniacs. I will drink some tea. You won't. You don't like tea.
I won't drink tea. But you will drink tea. And that'll
but
be
but it's also tea as in like laying down some tea?
Yes.
Like the truth?
Yep.
Because we're going to answer questions.
Yes, we're going to answer questions and that'll stay up so you can watch it even if you can't attend it. You can still watch and see your questions being answered.
So if you send questions beforehand, we'll queue them up to answer them. But we'll also take questions live.
Yes. And
if they're not inappropriate.
And I made a joke. I made a joke that we'd have to make questions up. We're going an hour.
We've got plenty of questions.
That's how we're going.
Yeah.
And we'll do as many questions as we can in that hour. But we may not get to everybody. But if we don't get if we don't get to everybody, I'll make sure those questions get answered in the next newsletter.
As long as we don't go off on a cultural tangent.
Oh, we will.
We'll be fine.
They've listened to us.
A cultural-like tangent.
Yes, they've listened to us.
Okay, one more thing before I get to talk about what I really want to talk about.
Okay.
And this is a downer.
Yes, it's a bit.
Many of you have probably heard that the World Central Kitchen, which is a charity that we have supported before with our merch sales, they lost 7 of their employees this week.
And these people go into war zones.
Voluntarily.
And feed people.
Yes.
That is all they do.
Yeah, they're saints.
They are as close as we can get to actual saints.
So first of all, I can't express how sad I am that that happened.
Yes.
But they've had to pause their efforts there, but they're going to start again. And so from now until the end of the year, all of our merch sales are going to go to donations to the World Central Kitchen so they can get started again.
Absolutely.
And we're going to have some new designs up this summer for some new stuff, including a cultural t-shirt with Poirot. And a sticker and stuff. So there might be some fun stuff to buy. If there isn't anything you want to buy, just make a donation to them directly. Like I said, they've delivered millions and millions of meals around the world. They're just doing amazing stuff. Okay, now can I talk about...
Next week, we're going to have the next remix episode and then 2 new episodes after that. And we have Tea with the Maniacs coming up. Now you can do what you wanted to do all day.
Oh my gosh, I've been chomping at the bit to talk about this piece of crap all day.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to Mystery Maniacs.
Mystery Maniacs is a comedy recap podcast dedicated to British mystery TV.
Oh, yeah.
Each week, we dig into an episode of the show, including the murders, the mayhem, the loonies, and everything else we love. This week, we're covering Poirot, Season 1, Episode 6.
Triangle at Rhodes.
I'm Mark.
I'm Sarah. We do spoil the episode, so if you haven't watched Triangle at Rhodes with David Suchet, go back and watch it and come back and join us.
And also, if your kids can take part in a fascist uprising in Greece,
they can probably listen to this podcast. They can handle it. Yes. Yeah.
Once again, intro for new people. First of all, thank you for coming back. If you listen to our first episode and then you're back, you're a maniac now.
Oh, yeah. It's official.
Yep. One of us. Mm-hmm. We're calling this Poirot, not Agatha Christie's Poirot. We realized that that's all part of it. This was broadcast the 12th of February, 1989, directed by Rennie Rye, who did a ton of Midsommars.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've got a couple of actors in common here. Valentine Chantry is played by Annie Lambert. She was in The Axeman Cometh, Midsommar. And Marjorie Gold, played by Angela Down, was in The Creeper and in Blue Herrings.
Yeah.
She was in two Midsommars.
She's in both of those. It's written by Stephen Wick-Lam.
Based on a short story by Agatha Christie.
Yes, this is...
Which is, again, like a gunshot to the face fast. The short story is like, they're on the beach. They're on an island. There's death. Done.
Yeah. There's
the end.
I was stunned how short Clapham Cook was, but Triangle Rhodes is about twice as long. But still, they're still very short. They're less than an hour to listen to.
It makes me appreciate the screenwriters more because they, especially with this one, they stretch it out in a way that doesn't feel like filler.
No. In fact, they do a great job with Barnes.
Yeah, and they combine two characters in one.
Yes.
So in the short story, Miss Lyle has a friend. There's two of them.
Yes.
It's Pamela and Sarah, right? Yes. But Sarah, gone.
Gone.
Thanks.
We don't need another one.
I guess we don't need a Sarah. Appreciate
it. We have you.
Aw, you're nice.
Yes.
So we just have Miss Lyle, who is the concentrated gossip monger power of both of them together in one.
When listening to the story just lately, I didn't really know why Sarah was there either in the story.
You think Agatha Christie would have done better just to have Miss Lyle too?
Yeah, I think so. And this is another example, and we'll get into a couple of these as we cover more Christie stuff. Agatha is like, this is a test run.
Yeah, she liked to test out story ideas in short story form and then expand them. So Evil Under the Sun is said to be kind of an expanded version of this storyline. And yeah. I can see that. I can see how she was playing with ideas here and then said, I like some of those. It's not an exact duplicate of the story by any means. They both have their own unique characters and plot lines, but they have a lot in common.
The one with the dead woman on the train is far closer.
Yeah. This plot, and again, we're talking about the plot of the TV show. Okay, that's what we're going to talk about. There are lots of experts out there who know far more about Agatha Christie, and it's fine if you want to talk more about how it compares to the short story. That's not what we're going to do. We've done it. We're done with that. Done. Where was I going? Oh, I know where I was going. This is kind of like a Fifth Sense Agatha Christie. Like, once you watch it and you know who the murderers are, you kind of want to go back and watch it again and go, where did I miss the clues that these two were up to something the whole time?
But I would say there's not enough of those clues.
I disagree. I think they're there.
Oh, they're there, but I wish...
And I think there's enough of them once you know. Now, do I buy it? No. Do I think there's giant plot holes in this story? Yes. I think they were having fun with a plot idea. Agatha Christie was having fun with the plot idea. But it's a short story for a reason, because stretched out, it wouldn't hold up, I don't think.
Let's begin with the first thing the writers do that is really good, which is the two guys at the Whitehaven mansion.
The postman and the doorman.
Yeah. Like, it's a great way to explain where everybody's gone.
Captain Hastings gone off to shoot things.
Yep.
Miss Lemon's gone off to see her sister, who we'll see again later.
Yes.
And Poirot's off to foreign parts.
He sent me a postcard with goats on it.
There are a lot of goats in this episode.
And then we get the musical cue of, okay, music guy, we want you to do the Poirot stuff, but make it Greek.
Yeah.
Okay.
Make it pluckier. No clarinet.
And slow.
Slow and plucky and slow a little and out of tune.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the music throughout the whole episode right there.
It's a little much.
It's like, hey, we're in foreign parts, people. Don't forget.
In Greek foreign parts, so slow it down and make it twangy.
Twangy. Is Greek music twangy?
I guess.
Because they're on Rhodes, which is a Greek island.
Yes.
But at this time, occupied and controlled by Italy.
Yes. Right? So this is most famously the location of a wonder of the ancient world, the Colossus of Rhodes, which supposedly, there's lots of debate on this.
Yeah. Was so big that it had one foot on each side of the bay?
Yes.
No.
No. It would have fallen down. But there was probably a big statue there.
I love that they're called the Dodecanese Islands.
Yes.
It sounds like geometry class.
Absolutely. So these are islands in the Mediterranean, which include everything from Sicily to Crete to Cyprus.
Yeah.
That are, especially during this time, the 30s, in constant change of hands.
Yeah. I don't know that I would have chosen Rhodes as a vacation spot in the 30s.
No.
It seems a little sketchy.
It seems incredibly sketchy.
Like, you don't know who's going to control it once you get there.
Considering they go to Italy first to go there.
Like, yeah, because they all come via Brindisi.
Yeah.
So you can only guess they took trains to Brindisi and then got a boat
to Rhodes. Yeah, they take London to Rome to Brindisi and then ferry across.
Do you want to strangle Tony on the dock? He's talking to the cars from the hotel.
He is the biggest bully ever at the beginning.
Oh, try not to run into anything.
Oh, he's just horrible. And you immediately feel bad for Douglas.
Oh, yeah. Because he's like, wait a minute, we're going there too. He's like, well, then you'll just have to wait for the next car.
Yep. Goodbye.
Jerk.
Yeah.
Tony's got quite the brow on him, doesn't he?
He does.
Like, it kind of like curls under his eyebrow, like Cro-Mag kind of. Definitely dominant male.
I think one of the things that's implied
until he puts on his swimsuit and then he doesn't look so dominant anymore. No.
It's one of the things that's implied is that Valentine Chantry is hard to live with.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
because he's her fourth husband or fifth husband.
This is her fifth marriage.
Yeah.
So it's her fifth husband. Clearly, and this could be said for anything that we talk about that's murder related. If these people just sat down and talked to each other, everything would be so much better.
Isn't that always the case?
But it kind of falls on traditional, she's horrible, so I want out of the marriage. Like, she's demanding, but she's not horrible.
Oh, no. She's just bought into the whole helpless woman thing and obviously attracts men who like to take care of women.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is appealing initially and then gets old real fast.
Well, that's the only part I like about Marjorie is when she's talking about men.
Mm-hmm.
Because she shows how little she likes men.
Yeah.
Every time she's alone with Poirot, she gets to talk the truth.
Marjorie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get back to calf leather gloves because that's far more.
But they're not. Okay. Yeah. So I've seen this episode so many gazillion times and I always think, oh, I love Miss Lyle's red gloves. They're so beautiful. And this time I really paid attention and they're not. They're like crocheted.
Are they?
They're like mesh.
Oh, I didn't know that. And I thought they were calf leather gloves.
No, they're two color.
Yeah, they're two color.
I'm sorry I'm making such a big deal about this.
This is maniacs.
They're really weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so hold your hand in front of you, all right? You're looking at your hand from the top. Now, they're red and white. Her thumb and her index finger and her pinky are red.
And then they're white in the middle.
Her middle and ring finger are white.
They should have a little leaf in them. Then they'd be Canadian gloves.
Like, they're meant for metalheads, basically.
Throw in the devil horns.
Yeah, if you fold the white fingers down, you can make. Yeah, but they're like open work crocheted gloves, and so which makes perfect sense because though it was demure to wear gloves at this point, they'd be really hot.
Yeah,
you know
they would be,
and so those would be better. But they're really funky.
And the whole beginning thing of her in
she's in the damsel in distress. She's in the marketplace and she's bought a brass teapot of some sort or coffee pot. And Major Barnes is hunting her.
Yes. Like, Major Barnes might be a great spy, but he's not so good at wooing the ladies.
He's not good with the ladies. Like later, you actually kind of like him. You realize he's a good guy, but he is awkward to the max with Miss Lyle. Yeah. By the way, once I realized her gloves were different than I remembered, I went looking into women's gloves of the time and these kinds of two-tone gloves in particular. These are super unusual. What was typical for two-tone gloves for women was that it was one color on the front and another color on the back. Yeah. Right? Which is super weird. If you like turn your hand, like do the queen wave, you're like red, white, red, white, red, white. It almost seems like they're signaling gloves.
Maybe.
Because you can't like wear them on opposite hands to have different color on top.
No.
You can't do that because that would actually be kind of versatile, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just the idea. I'm sitting here wiggling my hands around as if people can see me. They're just weird.
It's fantastic podcasting.
Yes.
Also, you notice that Poirot and her are dressed almost exactly alike.
Yeah, we've got a shot of this. He has a white linen suit on, which most men would have at the time because they're cool. They reflect the light. Never mind that it's a three-piece suit. He's always got it on. I'm hot just looking at him.
Yes.
It's not quite as bad as when he's in Egypt wearing the three-piece suit, but it's bad.
Or when they're in Mesopotamia, which is Iraq.
Yeah, all the hot, sandy places where most people wear layers but loose.
Yeah.
He's all buttoned up to his nose.
And he's got sunglasses.
Yeah.
We think this is the only time he wears sunglasses in the series.
That I can remember, but
there may be more.
In those times when he's in the desert or on a boat, he might have them. But
he puts them on really well right at the end of when they go start looking at the looking montage.
Yes. But he has on this white linen suit and he has on a red tie and he has a red rose.
He doesn't have the blue boutonniere.
No, it's a red rose, rosebud in his boutonniere. And she has on that white dress with the red polka dots. And she, doesn't she? And she has a red turtle pin on her lapel.
No, she doesn't have the polka dots.
Oh, it's just a white.
It's easy to mistake because she changes her clothes.
Everybody does.
100 times in this episode.
Anyway, they mirror each other.
Yeah,
they do. They look like they've meant to coordinate.
Yeah.
Which is cool. When she grabs him, obviously she recognizes him. She knows who he is and that he's staying at the hotel. So he's a safe person. Poirot does that a lot. He's the avuncular type. Young women see him as being safe and non-threatening.
Yeah, certainly in the Blue Train story.
Yeah.
She says, you're like my uncle.
Yeah. Will you be avuncular with me and teach me? They dress for dinner.
Yes.
What do you think about that? Like,
dinner are we talking about? Because
the first dinner in the hotel, we see Poirot putting on his tuxedo and tying his tie. And of course he knows how to tie a bow tie perfectly. Yes. Yep. But everybody has changed clothes for dinner. Are you kind of nostalgic for times when people did that and made dinner, especially on vacation at a resort, kind of an event? Or are you glad that we're so much more casual now?
Like, I liked dressing up as a kid to go traveling, but now I don't do it.
So I'm kind of torn.
Yeah.
Because as a woman, on one hand, it's a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, men can hop in and out of the shower, change clothes, and they're ready.
Yeah.
It's not that simple for women, especially for evening wear.
Well, and Pamela Lyle, her skirt, I think in that scene, is the shortest skirt I've seen on. Mm-hmm. On Poirot.
Yeah.
It's very short.
But I sort of appreciate the opportunity to dress up and look very nice. But to do it every night while you're on vacation, ugh.
Yeah.
Give me some shorts and a t-shirt.
It depends what kind of resort it is.
That's what I mean. I don't think I'd want to go to one of those resorts where you have to dress up for dinner.
By the way, there are black shirts in this episode.
Patooey.
Wow.
Fascists.
Holy Patooey. Shoehorning in politics.
I like when they walk by the girl and she's like, black shirts, patooey.
Yeah.
She speaks English for a second.
Yep. Mr. Barnes says the thing that I hate, little lady.
Oh. You don't like when men call women little lady?
No, because it is patronizing and condescending.
It's better than girl.
And it's meant to be not girl. And it's like halfway there.
Yeah. So then we have the beach scene.
I always say giant women. Winstead, a little lady.
Hey, giant women.
Yep.
I'm sure all the women you meet love that. The beach scene is so defining.
Okay. Yeah. The whole scene at the beach is really most of the short story.
It is. But it is the defining moment in the episode. It's where everything is set up.
I like to get good and hotted up. Poor Douglas. He's such an idiot.
The water's so warm, Douglas. Do calm. Poor Marjorie. Before you know, she's like evil. You feel so bad for her because she's just an average woman. And she's constantly looking at Valentine going, okay, I am not that. As soon as she gets in the water, she looks like, you know, an idiot slapping around in her swimming cap. And
so
he's up
Pamela
there
says that she
out.
Has unfortunate bathing costume.
Oh, she says that's an unfortunate bathing dress.
Yes. To Marjorie. But
I don't know who she's talking
about.
Yeah,
I don't know
because
either.
Douglas is wearing a white terry cloth robe.
My gosh, they're all so horrific.
But Tony's outfit isn't any better.
No.
He's got the blue woolen swimsuit, but then he's got that awful striped robe and that bad hat that he puts on with it. But I don't know. I think Douglas's is the worst because he's got that dang white belt on.
Oh, the white belt is the worst.
He wears it later, too. I'm like, take off that dang white belt.
And this is so Chess, right? Like, it is Marjorie and
Douglas.
No, Marjorie and
Tony
moving the pawn that is
Douglas towards Valentine. Yeah. So we may as well start talking about this now and we can just talk about it throughout. So the whole idea here, everybody knows this because we spoil it, is that in actuality, Marjorie and Tony come to this island already being in love with one another.
Yep.
And the whole idea is that they're going to kill off one of the spouses and frame the other one for it that they can be together.
Douglas says it's her idea. And then later she says it was his idea to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was her idea.
When they're walking up to the hotel the first time, having finally got a ride to the hotel, he's like, I don't know why we had to come so far to enjoy a beach. And we can only assume that Tony has somehow planted it in Valentine's head, too, that they're going to go to Rhodes. So they're going to meet at this hotel, and they have been plotting this.
Which Pamela says, it's weird that she's here.
That Valentine's there?
Yeah, like it's kind of a small place for her.
Yeah. It's like a step down.
Yeah.
And this is also the scene where we get to see Poirot and Miss Lyle in full gossip onlooker effect. Yeah. And she's unabashedly curious about people. She has no problem admitting that she enjoys watching other people have their drama.
Now, she draws the triangle here.
Yeah.
And in the story, Poirot draws the triangle.
Yeah, which I can understand.
Which is totally brilliant that they draw that triangle and you imagine who the triangle is.
Yeah.
And Poirot, from this point on, is talking about another triangle.
Yeah. He knows exactly what's going on pretty early on and tries to prevent it and can't.
Also, I'm kind of amazed at her ability to draw such a uniform triangle so well.
So in the morning, they're all at the beach.
Yep.
In the afternoon, part of the party goes to the ancient city and part of the party goes to a dig.
Yes.
And Poirot has changed into another suit.
Yes.
So he had his beach suit.
He had his beach suit.
And now he has his dig suit.
Now he has his dig suit where they find fresh and saltwater fossils.
Ooh. Never mind that, like, there's so much history on Rhodes. I doubt fossils are what are of interest there, but I'm sure they're there.
Yeah.
There's a goof.
What
when
goof?
Poirot is sitting reading the newspaper.
Okay.
So the title says Abyssinia, Italian threat. France fails to choose at Geneva, right? Mm-hmm. So they're talking about politics. And we're supposed to see that. We're supposed to see that there are tensions.
Yeah.
And he's pretending to be busy.
And he makes reference to it with the major later.
Right. Because he knows Abyssinia is going to be important. The wind blows and ruffles the paper. And did you notice something?
No.
I can't believe you didn't notice this. The inside of the paper is completely blank.
Oh!
Totally blank. There's print on the front and the back of the outside page, and the rest of it is just blank.
Now, we got to tell you, folks, that we love these.
If you're not a Midsummer Maniac, you're new to a Mystery Maniacs, so you got to know we kind of geek out over things in print, especially mistakes that are made.
We found in a Midsummer episode a magazine article which had text from a Microsoft manual for Office.
Copied and pasted as the text in the article. Oops.
We were stunned to find it and that the paper's blank.
Do you know where Abyssinia is?
No.
What Abyssinia became?
No.
Today, Abyssinia is Ethiopia.
Ah, yes, 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 yes.
And I learned a fantastic fact when I looked that up. I thought it was Ethiopia, but I wasn't sure. Abyssinia is an exonym.
What's an exonym?
It's the name for something given to it by people from the outside.
Ah, okay.
So non-Ethiopians called it Abyssinia.
Okay.
Ethiopians called it Ethiopia.
It's like India. When we say India, the country of India, no one from India calls it India.
Not within their own country.
No.
So that's an exonym. And then an endonym is what the people who are native from that place call it.
Okay.
I hadn't heard those terms before. Exonym and endonym.
That's fascinating.
So you may call yourself Mark.
Yeah.
That's your endonym. But if everybody else calls you Aardvark, that's an exonym if you don't call yourself that.
It's sort of like when Americans try to say Toronto. Let's have pink gin.
Oh, we have to have pink gin.
Pink gin is the thing.
Pink gin. Oh, pink gin, which is ruined for me now. In my head, before actually bothering to look it up, I always thought, ooh, it's pink and it's gin.
It's like pink and gin, so it's like...
It must be like sweet
like
or fruity.
Pink lemony gin.
Yeah.
That would be great. No.
No, it's bitter gin.
It's bitter gin.
It's Angostura bitters, which are citrusy and spicy. It's like clove and orange and not summer.
No.
At all. To me, not summer.
No.
And, you know, gin tastes like pine needle smell. That's not good. I don't think I'd like that.
I wouldn't like that drink at all.
No, I would like gin with a little pink lemonade.
Little pink lemonade gin? That's not bad at all.
That sounds good. A little gin and juice. I can go for that.
Sidecar, yeah. The orangeade. Maybe.
Sidecar, which is what Pamela orders.
Yes.
Is orange liqueur, lemon juice, cognac, and a sugared rim.
Yep.
Do you know where the name comes from?
No.
Oh, it's controversial.
Oh.
French and English argue over who came up with it and where it comes from. It's either somebody came into a bar once and requested this drink having arrived in the sidecar of a motorcycle. Snore.
Yeah.
Or since it's shaken to cool it, shaken with ice, and you pour it into a martini glass, what's left, if there's extra in the shaker, you can pour it into a shot glass and give the person who ordered it both of them. And the shot glass is called the sidecar.
Sidecar. Douglas's belt is horrendous.
Always.
His visor is worse.
Oh, his sun visor is so bad. And Valentine is like, hello, I have a flamboyant hat on. I'm so glamorous. And he's like, hey, y'all, I got my sun visor on. Let's go see them. They're ruins. he looks so plebeian next to her in that hat.
Ugh.
He's not sophisticated.
No.
So but neither is Marjorie. Marjorie is common out the wazoo, which is why I don't understand how she and Tony are a pair. Like, how do they meet?
Yeah, I wish there was more there.
And why did he go, ooh, I like ladies with no eyebrows. V-v-v-voom. Hey, you're...
Yeah, like, what does she offer? Yeah.
You hate people who get divorces. I like you. Yeah, I mean, like, what was appealing about her?
Mrs. Lyle is going to cause some trouble.
Pamela.
She's a disturber.
I'm going to call her Miss Lyle.
Yes.
Pamela doesn't suit her, I don't think, but
wait till you see the view. They go up to the ruined church and the writers are like, oh, let us put in a metaphor that is the snake.
The snake.
The quarry of the viper. If all the killers were clearly marked, my job would be useless.
He has that little line every once in a while in stories where he's like, well, if that was the case, I'd be out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. Yeah, and it's like, well, Marjorie's pretty common and plain looking. She's not giving anything away that she's a killer. She doesn't look like a killer.
And then
and they say, this is the Island of Snakes. And where is the Island of Snakes, actually? Do you know?
Is it in the Mediterranean?
Mm-mm.
No, okay.
There's two.
Okay.
Yay!
Yay. So you have to understand, dear listener, it's not that I don't like snakes, but snakes in water are... No.
They're the worst for you, right?
They're the only... Like, snake on the ground, I'll pet it. like, snakes are beautiful animals.
But in the water.
You put it in the water, I'm like, there's a mark-shaped hole in
the
wall.
It's right out.
Yeah.
Mark-shaped hole in the water. So there's two snake islands in reality. One of them is Ilha de Comida Grande, which is off of the coast of Brazil.
Okay.
Snakes were trapped there in an ice age.
Oh.
And it is the only place where you can find a certain kind of pit viper.
Oh.
But they don't call it Snake Island for nothing. It's estimated that there is one snake for every square meter.
Wow.
It's not tiny.
No.
It's covered in snakes.
Yeah.
It's like Indiana Jones there.
I'm not going there.
You're not allowed to go there.
Well, yeah.
It's okay.
I would hope so.
It's a refuge for snakes. These pit vipers eat birds, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope awesome. It's far off the coast of Brazil.
The other snake island has been in the news much more recently. Remember when the Ukraine, when Russia first invaded Ukraine and there were those two guys on the lighthouse?
Yes. That's a snake island?
Who yelled at the Russians that they could F off.
Yeah.
That island that they are on is called Snake Island.
Okay.
It's a little, it's a rock with a lighthouse on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's some called snakes.
Yeah. Because it kind of delineates Ukrainian waters. Right.
Yeah.
So as soon as the Russians went past it, like, they were officially in Ukrainian water.
That's so, like, so typical, because, like, I grew up near a lake in Canada and there was an island in it, and people were like, oh, that island's got so many snakes on it. It's a thing.
Yeah. But as far as I can tell, there's no snakes on Snake Island in Ukraine.
We're
but not. That other one, stay far away.
Yeah. The Brazilian one?
Any definitely. Place that has one snake per meter, I'm not going.
No, no. Let us move now to the worst restaurant ever.
Oh, boy. Are you talking about the dinner?
Yes.
Where these people voluntarily all sit down to eat dinner together?
Yes.
How do you feel about wandering musicians in restaurants?
Especially when they're playing bad Poirot. Boing, boing,
boing, boing. And that's not an insult to Greek music.
No.
I think Greek music is much better than what they're playing.
I think that music is the celebration of life. And if they want to play music in the restaurant, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But they should, whenever I've done that or seen that, all of those musicians are well aware of how it works. And they move throughout the restaurant. And when everybody stops and pays attention to them, they stop and they play a little louder. But then they move on very quickly.
See, I've had the opposite experience.
Okay.
Where wandering musicians like that will play next to your table until you pay them attention and give them a tip, and then they'll go away.
Oh, no.
And it's really annoying.
I can imagine.
It's loud.
I think I've only been in one place, which was a Greek place in Toronto that had wandering musicians. So this is my Greek restaurant story.
Do tell.
So there's a band and all that stuff, and we're there, and they do this thing.
This is in Toronto?
Yep. They do this thing at with Greek restaurants where they have, like, fire.
They go, hoppa! And yeah. They light the cheese on
they
fire.
They light the cheese on fire. And it caught some poor woman's hair on fire.
Oh, my gosh.
Got it out. Smoke everywhere. And the owner comes out and goes, everybody's food's for free.
Please don't sue us.
Yeah.
Woman whose hair is on fire. Did they yell, hoppa! After they put her hair
everybody
out?
Everybody was like, woo!
I don't think she was.
No.
Even if your hair only burns a little bit, it's not going to be nice.
Needless to say, it didn't smell.
The smell well would be there. So bad. That yep. would ruin your meal for sure. I don't care how free it is.
Yep.
Wow. Did you ever go back to that restaurant?
No.
Hoppa! This dinner is just awkward. Like, everybody's
and Poirot
complaining.
Just wants his food.
Poirot does not tolerate social awkwardness well.
No.
I think he's a firm believer that true manners are intended to help people around you feel comfortable.
Yes.
That's the whole point of having manners.
Yes.
And these people are not showing manners. They're arguing. They're critiquing everything, bickering. Marjorie's down there. I just don't understand why people can get divorced.
Easy marriage, easy divorce.
I hate people who get divorced, which she knows applies to Valentine.
Yep. And
so does she say it to alienate Valentine more, to drive Valentine and Douglas together?
Maybe, but Valentine's husband is so mean to Marjorie here.
Yeah. They're playing we don't know each other and we don't like each other pretty well at this point.
Yeah.
And then Poirot orders bowels and spit.
Bowels and spit, which is lamb kidneys on a stick.
Yeah. So I did quite a bit of digging around for bowels and spit. It's kokoretsi.
Okay.
Is typically what it's called in Greece.
Oh, and they're so English travel. Like, this is a comment on English tourism, too, because they're like, oh, use this menu. It has a little bit of English in it.
Well, it's good to be able to read the menu. You can't always be fluent in the local language.
I guess.
If it's a tourist place, they should have bilingual menus.
Still.
If they want to do business.
Still, it's kind of English touristy.
Anyhow, yes, kidneys on a stick, but it's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Kokoretsi is actually organ meat, offal.
Yes.
Sweetbreads, hearts, lungs, and kidneys on a stick wrapped in intestine.
Oh.
That's what keeps it on the stick.
Okay.
The intestines of suckling lambs are preferred.
Ooh.
Which means a sheep that's still breastfeeding from its mother.
Yeah. Poirot's no vegetarian here.
No. It doesn't sound good.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
It's not. If you like organ meat, good for you. More for you, because I'm not touching it.
Marjorie takes off.
Oh, she's just, oh, I can't believe I offended someone.
And in the story here, it comes out later that Poirot knows she's going to kill at this point in time. He knows something's up with her, and he's warning her to leave. Not because she'll get hurt, but because if she kills somebody, they'll catch
leave
her.
Leave the island if you value your life. The penalty, the death penalty was suspended for a long time in Greece and in Italy. But for some reason, I know you're going to think this is way crazy. The fascists reinstated it. Isn't that
crazy?
Nuts?
Yeah.
At this point in time, on Rhodes, the death penalty was by firing squad.
Okay.
So it's not playing around.
Poirot is telling her, don't do this.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't look like that here.
Now, why do you think, well, I know why. I'm going to ask you anyway. Why do you think he doesn't say, I know what you're thinking about, don't do it?
Because
it would ruin it for us.
It would ruin it for us.
Yes. So he has to be subtle?
Yes.
But then everybody makes up.
Yeah, the biggest problem I have with this whole story is that everybody makes up for one night and then someone dies.
Well, they have to make up because otherwise, how are they going to poison Valentine, right? Yep. My bigger problem is that Marjorie tells Miss Lyle that Douglas wants a divorce after knowing Valentine for 2 days.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like that kind of person.
No. And plus, he's supposedly Catholic and doesn't do divorce.
Well, she's lying.
Yeah.
He hasn't said anything like that. But why would she think anybody would believe it?
Yeah. I don't know.
We know he's Catholic because he crosses himself at the little chapel. Yes. And we know that Poirot is too because he does it too.
Then we divide in two parts here.
Mm-hmm.
There's the border kerfuffle and the murder.
Poor Poirot.
And the biggest problem I have with all of this is that Valentine's husband plays snooker with gloves on.
You know why?
Because he doesn't leave
fingerprints on the poison bottle.
Poison bottle.
Yeah, but why does no one notice that?
I did.
Why doesn't anybody in the scene notice it? Why doesn't Douglas go, old chap, why are you wearing gloves while we play pool?
I double check.
Or snooker or billiards or whatever.
No one else has pool. They're playing snooker.
No one else has gloves on.
No one else has gloves on and they're playing snooker.
Yep. None of the men have gloves on.
Nope.
It's just to avoid putting fingerprints on.
Fine. I'll have a gin and ginger beer.
Oh, crazy.
That sounds better than pink gin.
It does. Though, I don't know, I think there are better liquors to go with ginger ale than gin. Why does everybody like gin so much? Is gin big in Greece? Why is nobody drinking the stuff that tastes like anise that you pour water in? You know what I'm talking
Ouzo.
About? Ouzo. No. Yes?
That's Greek.
Yeah, why is nobody drinking that?
Nobody's drinking. Well, because it's Itai now.
Itai.
Itai.
Because alien is just too many more syllables to say. Okay, so let's talk about this murder scene.
Okay.
Because I've got another issue with it. Okay. So the ladies have gone off to see the sunset.
Yes.
At the peak.
Temple of Apollo.
Right? Who knows how long they'll be gone?
Mm-hmm.
The men wrap up their game of snooker.
Yep.
Again, it's hard to guess how long a game of snooker is going to take.
Yep.
Right? It could have taken 10 minutes longer, 10 minutes less, at least. So 20-minute window to be conservative.
Yep.
Right? They go to the bar. They order drinks. Now, Tony cannot touch his drink. He's got to order one, but he can't drink it. And he doesn't know when Valentine is going to get there to give it to her.
And he's gotten the poison from Marjorie? Okay. The worst thing that these two people can do is be seen together.
Right.
So why doesn't he go get the poison?
Maybe it's tough to get away from Valentine.
Maybe.
So she snuck off in the afternoon, yep. got the poison
yep.
from an old lady who doesn't like have a sign out front saying, poisons, I sell poisons, come and get it. Somehow, I don't know how she gets it. I don't buy that either.
Yep.
But, and it's such a rare poison too.
Yes.
She gives him the poison before dinner at some point, right?
Yes.
So now he's got it. He must already have his gloves on.
Yes.
He orders a drink. He drugs the drink.
He lets it sit there.
And sets it down.
I think he might wait to drug it until she gets there.
It doesn't matter. He still has to not drink that drink, which you could finish in like two gulps.
Does he say the thing where I just ordered this? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He says, I just ordered it. You can have that one and I'll get another.
Yeah.
And he knows she's going to want a pink gin.
Yeah.
That's easy. Yeah. That's predictable. But she could have been 20 minutes late.
Yeah.
He could have sat there in front of that drink. But you're right. If he doesn't poison it until she gets there, then he could have drank it if he had to and ordered another one he had to. But then he's got to slip the bottle into Douglas's pocket, which is easy enough to do in the kerfluffle of Valentine choking and everything.
Yeah. She's a good dead body here.
Oh, man. Does she crumple or what?
She crumples. The cough is real.
Miss Lyle. Who knows what to do?
Call a doctor.
And she's just kind of coughing and can't quite get her breath. It's like 50-50. She could drop dead or successfully clear her throat and be fine. Who knows? And then she's just dead. And they don't close her eyes.
No.
They don't lay her out.
No.
They just leave her bent double like, in a chair with her neck.
She fell over on the chair.
Her neck is like jammed into the arm.
Her mouth is like.
And her eyes are wide open.
Yeah. Good dead body.
Oh, yes. Very good dead body.
So now the kerfluffle with the passport.
Mm.
So Poirot's trying to leave.
He's missed his boat, though, because they're like, you're a spy. And he's like, I'm a Belgian citizen. Well, you're a spy.
So we need to talk about that because all over the internet, it says he's an American citizen. He says he's an American citizen. That's what the subtitles say. It's not what he says.
No.
Don't mistake that. Watch it without the subtitles on that scene.
And you'll hear.
He clearly says
I'm Belgian.
Miss Lyle here is upset, but she's so happy that he hasn't gone.
She's clearly extremely relieved. And before she even says what's happened, he knows something important has happened.
Yeah.
Because his tone changes completely. He stops arguing.
And he has no time for the fascist.
You idiot! My boat has already left!
Yeah.
Pamela. What's going on?
Yeah.
Bring my luggage.
Yep.
And they're off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that scene. I think it's well done. She shows up at the dock and she's like, where is he? Oh, I can't see him.
And then you can hear him. And it's really well. Uh-huh. The sound is really done very well.
Because he is super mad.
Yes.
That's one theme between the Clapham Cook and Triangle at Rhodes is we get to see Poirot super mad.
Yep. I'll tell you one thing. If you have a teenager and they want to grow some facial hair, you know what you need to tell them to do? Get accused of murder.
Yeah.
Because, man, Douglas has got a full beard there all of a sudden.
He's like Chia Pet face. Oof, I got a beard. That's what Englishmen do when they get stressed.
Yeah.
Their facial hair just shoots out. Why does Poirot assure Marjorie that Douglas is innocent? Why does he bother?
I don't know.
Is he teasing her?
I think he doesn't want her to know that he knows.
Because she and Tony will take off all the sooner.
Yeah.
But then he talks to the Italian policeman.
Yes.
Whose Mussolini portrait is not big enough.
No.
It's only like 10 feet tall.
But the fascist policeman is Hastings in this scene.
He is. I just can't believe how big that painting is. Like...
But you would it's absolutely understand.
Ginormous.
This guy is in the outpost of Italy.
Yeah.
He's not at home where the things are going on.
Right.
He doesn't want to be there. Everybody hates him. This woman died. I found the poison on this guy. Cut and dried. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
They're foreign people, too.
Let's not complicate this.
Yes.
We don't need any more trouble absolutely. Than we've already got. And Poirot is like, you're wrong.
And then Major Barnes becomes, this is where he transitions.
Yep.
He goes from... crazy guy with fish to, oh, I know some people here. And Poirot is like, I know you know some people. And the interaction between them there is so really good.
Yeah, because Barnes has been pretending to fish when he's not stalking women.
Yeah.
Aggressively stalking women, when in reality, he's been looking at the English defenses.
Yeah.
In preparation for war.
Yeah.
And I don't quite know exactly how he's doing that off the coast of Rhodes, but whatever he's doing, it's patriotic.
Yeah.
He's just kind of bad at covering for it.
And Poirot,
when he comes up on the boat with the fish, he's like, it's 5 days old. Ugh. I'm just impressed with the bribes he must be paying those boatmen.
But you know,
to pretend they've been out fishing.
You know, Poirot knows what's up when he's watching Marjorie and Tony getting in the car.
Yeah.
He knows it's up then.
It's like, oh, they're going to run.
Yeah.
Right away, he knows. The Greek girl, it's awfully nice when she saves Miss Lyle from Barnes at the beginning. But the second time, she's a plot convenience that is heavy-handed.
Yeah, I would agree.
She's a deus ex machina there. Yeah. Yeah. Because Pamela does not speak Greek.
No.
But she manages to get through to a blind woman by speaking very loud and very slow.
Yeah.
The fact that the girl's grandmother sells poison, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And again, why does Marjorie choose such a weird poison?
Yeah. Only a herbalist or a quack.
She could have brought arsenic with her.
She could have.
And nobody would have noticed.
It was Agatha Christie. It was freely available. You're an Agatha Christie story? Here is your vial of arsenic.
You could get it at a pharmacy.
Yeah.
You could get it at a hardware store.
Yeah.
You might have signed a register, but that would have been back in England.
Yeah.
Nobody would have connected it to her here.
No one would have connected it to her.
But no, she has to get horned pit viper venom. What? Let's talk about the forensic guy. You talk about Barnes having connections. Yes. His name is Skelton.
Yes.
He is the oddest person in this episode.
I just showed up and stayed forever.
What is up with his outfit?
Yeah. He's like, I dress like a native now.
On top of my English clothes.
Yes.
I just put a shepherd outfit and a fez on top of my clothes.
Yeah.
And blend right in. What?
Yeah.
And, oh, it's this viper, is horned pit viper venom is very difficult to get. I mean, it would have to be a quack.
And the forensics guy.
And they say, where can we look for it? And he goes, try around here. What?
And the forensics guy would be an Italian. Like, the Italians are fascist.
Yeah.
They're going to have all their dudes in
every
position.
They're not
going
to let a Brit do the forensics.
No.
Now, they might have had an Italian forensics guy who, being a scholar, made friends with a British guy who had the same knowledge. They're more scientists than they are fascist, maybe. But they wouldn't put the Brit in charge of the forensics.
He should be Greek.
Yeah, he should be Greek.
Yeah.
And then he could wear that outfit.
And then he could say, no one likes the Italians.
Of course I'll help you.
Yeah. Boat chase.
It's more than a boat chase. Tony's got dynamite.
Dynamite.
Because, you know, they use it on the fish.
And he kind of drops it.
Well, they shoot it out of his hand, I think.
He doesn't throw it very far.
Because the Italian police are like, dun da da da, out of nowhere. Like,
yeah.
How did they not see them coming?
Yeah.
They're the only ones.
You can't appear out of nowhere in a boat.
Not on the ocean. They're the only ones with a decent motor, though. The other two boats are like, put, 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 put. And the poor guys who are running the boats are like, I didn't ask for any of this.
Yeah.
I didn't.
The taxi,
they're only giving me 5 pounds.
The taxi drivers and the guys who run the boats in this episode are the most put upon people.
Oh, my gosh. So like, I this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
They better give me 5 stars. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Fascist cops arrive. I have fascist cops arrive in my notes, and it's a good thing. They are. They save the day. The fascist cops save the day.
You know, as a complete side note, I don't remember why I wondered it, but I think I was listening to history podcasts or something about fascists. And I was thinking, I wonder if it's a slur, because, of course, we think of it as a slur. To call somebody a fascist is never a compliment.
They were pleasantly fascist.
But pleasantly, well, these cops were useful fascists. But then we ask a friend of ours who has a PhD in history and actually studies World War II. And he said that they were proud to be fascists. They called themselves fascists.
They didn't want to be initially. Communists.
Yeah. But then the term got all the baggage. But I didn't know that they referred to themselves as fascists.
Yeah.
I thought it was always a negative term. Did you notice Poirot's crazy binoculars?
Oh, yeah.
They're like 2 feet long.
They are.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
They're marine binoculars.
Marine binoculars?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They see further than regular binoculars. It's basically two telescopes stuck together.
Maybe they should have seen the cops.
Well, he wasn't looking behind
him. That's true.
He was looking at Tony Dynamite about to blow them up. What was he going to do? Was he going to throw it that far? They're like so far away from each other.
Yeah.
I love Marjorie standing up in the boat. Oh, no, here they come. Tony's, don't worry. I got dynamite. What?
Yeah, like.
They can't have a gun. They wouldn't have tried to get it through customs.
If Marjorie is so hyper intelligent and devious, she would have thought of a better escape plan than this.
There'd be they're on an island. They got to get on a boat. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah.
They don't have a whole lot of, they can't take a train off the island.
No.
They're going to Turkey, which is 11 miles away.
Why do they steal their passport?
To get them back.
Well, I realize that, but it makes it incredibly, like, you notice right away.
They shouldn't be traveling under their own passports after this, right?
Yeah, like, and you notice right away that since they stole the passports, they're obviously evil.
Right. Well, and they're clearly on the run.
Yeah.
So earlier, Tony is talking to the hotel manager and saying he wants his wife's body and he wants to be on a train that day. So we have to believe that the original plan was just to frame Douglas and get out of town.
Yeah. Because
right?
Poirot...
That's what they intended to do.
Is the fly in the ointment?
Yeah. Here. Well, of course he is. That's his MO, right? He's always like, oh, drats, that Belgian detective is staying here too. Man, the hubris of trying to pull something like this off after you find out Poirot's staying at your hotel.
Marjorie should have been like,
for it.
Cancel.
Nope.
Abort.
Yes. We'll have to do this some other way.
Yep. A much easier, safer way.
This is a bad plan. What I love are the criminals who think we'll just take out Poirot first and then we'll pull off our plan. Like that never goes well either. They say that Douglas is going to stay till the end.
Yep.
Does that mean he's going to stay till the end of Marjorie's trial?
I guess.
That's the impression I get.
Yeah.
Not to the end of his vacation.
Or till she dies because she's going
to the end of her trial.
Yeah.
I think they're probably both going to... I don't know. That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. They're British citizens. So at this point, Italy's not trying to stir up too much trouble with anybody else. So they might extradite them.
Yeah. There's no talk of embassy here the way there is in other episodes.
There's no embassy on Rhodes at this time. I looked it up.
No.
They'd have to go back to the mainland, which they probably will for the trial anyway. They'd have to go back to Italy.
They'd have to go back to Italy, even though Greece is closer.
Yeah.
Because it's not Greek.
No, they'd have to go back to Italy. Yeah. Meanwhile, Barnes is back to going to Ethiopia.
Yes.
He's going to blend in real well there.
Yeah.
Little bald, chubby English guy with a sunburn. Do you think Miss Lyle is in love with Poirot?
I think because we talked about last episode about how young they are here, they're in their 40s. I think it might be that she's in love with him.
How old do you think she's supposed to be?
Mid-30s.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she has to be old enough to travel alone and it not be disreputable, right? But she's not an old maid either.
No.
She's not allowing herself to live like an old maid,
I guess.
And
she's not the girls of the next episode.
No, she's not a teenager.
No.
I think you're right. She might be 30.
Yeah.
So he's like, 10 or 11 years older than her. I know I said earlier that he's kind of avuncular to her, but I agree.
Poirot kind of blushes a little bit when she kisses him.
He's flattered by her attention, but she's not his type.
No.
When you compare her to the woman who he actually falls in love with.
No, and if Hastings was here...
Oh, gosh, Hastings would be all over her.
Yes.
And I think she would like Hastings.
I think so, too.
She'd be like, your friend's real smart, but I like you.
Yeah. you drive a fast car.
Yeah.
Know how to drink and have fun.
Yeah. I think they'd be okay together.
So Best Corpse.
Nice corpse.
Of course, is going to be Valentine.
Well, yeah, she's the only corpse, but she's a good one.
She's very good.
I'll give it to her. So Douglas is going to stay. So after the credits, Douglas is going to stay on the island until Marjorie is sent back to Italy for trial. And I'm guessing she won't even be tried in Italy. She'll be sent. She and Tony will go back to England for trial.
But they're going up the pokey.
Oh, they're definitely going to prison.
Yeah.
If not, England doesn't have a death penalty at this point. So that might save their lives.
But Douglas, as a Catholic, can't divorce her, even if she is convicted of trying to frame him for murder.
Unless he applies for some kind of
annulment or something.
They don't have any kids.
No, they don't.
He could apply for an exception.
Yeah.
The church is pretty understanding of that kind of situation.
Like much Agatha Christie, children are non-present in this story.
Yeah. Oh, children come up in the next one that we're going to cover.
Yes.
Valentine's dead. Douglas, yeah, I mean, he's going to follow her. Is Pamela going to go home soon? What is her deal? Why is she there forever?
She does, and she appears in another episode, doesn't she?
No.
I think she appears in one of the episodes he's in Cornwall, I thought. Maybe I was wrong.
I don't think so.
Maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure someone will tell me if I'm wrong.
In the scene where she gives him a kiss and he gets in the car and goes off, there's a goof.
Yeah.
We see a reflection of the camera equipment in the side of the car.
The camera
equipment. Which is indicative of an early season because, wow, they do not let that stuff happen later. There's some episodes with so many mirrors, you think the cameraman has got to be invisible.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
It is so incredibly hard to do. It's amazing that it all works out so well.
Yeah.
Now, that would have been fixed in post, mm-hmm. right? You would notice it in post and somebody would fix it there.
Yeah. Yeah. You could, Photoshop it, basically. You'd remove that reflection. Yeah. You'd fix it. I think it's kind of touching. It's kind of quaint to see little errors like that because there is an entire group of people making that show.
Yeah.
They never get to be on camera, so I'm okay with that. That is Triangle at Rhodes, Season 1, Episode 6 of Poirot. What are we doing next time?
Trouble at Sea, which is Episode 7 of Season 1. It's the next episode.
You've heard of my hospital, Trouble haven't you? Yep. Again, I know too many lines.
Yeah. And this will be August 22nd. You can find Mystery Maniacs on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and email. Mm-hmm. Our Twitter.
We'll soon have some swag up in our Spreadshirt store with the new logo if you want a Mystery Maniacs t-shirt or something like that.
And we're beginning the promotion on all sorts of new groups and new people. So hopefully if you're new, please continue and tell us what you'd like to hear. We're doing Father Brown next and then
Jonathan Creek.
Halloween episodes, then Jonathan Creek, then Christmas episodes with our Christmas song. If you know anything about us, we do a Christmas song every year.
This one's a doozy.
This one will be a doozy.
And when we announce the new swag is available, we'll also announce the new charity that we're going to give money to at that point too.
I'm going to tell you that if you're listening on YouTube, please like and subscribe. We are almost at 850 subscribers.
We want to get to 1,000.
I think we're even closer than that now.
If we get to 1,000, we get our own little community space on YouTube, and that would be really fun. People who are Midsummer Maniacs have heard this a million times.
But we're almost there. We've had a lot of subscriptions in the last little while, so keep it up. Get your kids all subscribed.
Okay, is that it?
Yep. Bye, Maniacs.
Bye, Maniacs.
Thanks for joining us on the Mystery Maniacs podcast. If you enjoyed our crazy podcast today, don't miss out on future episodes. Follow us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and exclusive sneak peeks. Subscribe, like, and share to spread the word. Bye, Maniacs.
All they do is recap the episode after telling you to watch the episode, and then they just walk you through it like you haven't watched it or like you're too stupid to understand what happened.